Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I'm joined by Bobby Morrison, who is the Chief Revenue Officer at Shopify. You know Shopify if you're in the space. Even if you're not in the space, you probably know Shopify. They, of course, power an insane number of our stores' backends. And talked about a lot of things, and thank you to members of our community who sent in questions. I tried to get as many of those as I could on the discussion with Bobby. But we talk about how Shopify is helping stores today. The mission has changed from the technical side of getting a store online to how do you get attention. We talked about that. We talked about Shop Marketplace, their Shop app, how they see that evolving. Are merchants going to be able to trust that that's going to be an independent place in the future, that they won't have to deal with the same kind of potential problems that Amazon had once they collected a lot of power and audience presence there in terms of decreasing margins. Probably one of the most interesting, well, not probably, definitely to me, the most interesting part of this discussion was diving into how Shopify is using AI in there within the company. Like, obviously, everyone's talking about AI. A lot of the discussions aren't helpful, but many of you will remember Toby's kind of declaration that they're not hiring people unless you can prove that AI can't do their job. And it's a little more nuanced than that, but the way which they're incorporating AI is pretty impressive. We dive into that, and we even talk a little bit about what Toby is like behind closed doors, as well as future product feature rollouts, pricing, a bunch of different things, and in terms of pricing for transaction fees, all that good stuff that merchants really care about. So tried to get as much real information as I could. Bobby was a good sport about it. Had a good time. So disclosure up front, I am a Shopify shareholder. I have been for a number of years, and just want to make sure that is on the table before we dive in. So let's get into it. Bobby, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on, and I'm excited to talk about Shopify, merchants. I mean, at this point, Shopify and e-commerce are so synonymous. We track our merchants, what percentage use different platforms. We scan kind of our membership base weekly. And I think at this point, Shopify or Shopify Plus is probably powering 2/3, maybe even close to 3/4 of our 7 and 8 figure store members' businesses, which is pretty amazing.
Well, that's great. I'm glad we get a chance to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to kick it off. I mean, Shopify, we were just talking before we hit record about, you know, kind of the early days of Shopify. And in those early days, Shopify was really a vanguard in helping solve for what was such a huge pain point, like getting a store online, managing an online catalog, right? Like that was difficult to do. And if you fast forward 10 plus years, today the challenge is less about the technical side, the infrastructure, and it's more about how do I get awareness? How do I have, you know, operate leanly? How do I build great products and brands? I mean, I was diving into your guys' 10Q and 10K before we hopped on. And I think some of the challenges you recognize for merchants right now, like increased competition, macroeconomic headwinds, profitability pressures. I'm going to add Amazon, Facebook, and Google using their, you know, near if not monopoly power to really continually extract margin from people on those platforms. And so I guess my question is, how do you think about, in the early days, arming the rebels was giving them the tech infrastructure. In the world we live in today, how does that change? How do you think, what does arming the rebels to succeed in this new world mean for Shopify?
At the end of the day, we wake up and then we have a huge part of our organization that just thinks about how do we make our customers more successful on the platform. And you're right, like I used to conflate easy and simple with maybe being less than, and I think a lot of the market did. And I got corrected very early on in my career here at Shopify that making things simple is actually very, very hard and complex, and that our software is extremely deep in its capabilities. We could have just as easily not done that and put the burden on the customer. So thanks for acknowledging that. You know, we see our role not just in helping our merchants get on board and productive, but then surrounding them with the right partners and app providers in the market to help them be successful. So that next stage of growth often ends up being a conversation around, you know, what are we seeing in the world of SEO post click through in more view through environments, and how can we help them out? So like, we'll continue to do that. Some of it comes through new partnerships, some of it's existing partnerships. But where we have domain expertise, we like to package it up and then serve it to our community and let them consume it and leverage it to help them make better decisions.
The marketplace is interesting. The shop app, and I think, you know, again, going back, Shopify originally started as infrastructure, and now there's this new side to the business, which is the shop app. It's kind of an aggregator or consolidator of all the different Shopify stores. On one hand, you could say, hey, that's a great way that Shopify is helping merchants be able to get exposure, additional traffic, things like that, compete with places like Amazon. And I'm sure that is a factor. The other side of that too, though, and again, I mentioned earlier that I asked a lot of our members some questions. And one of the concerns that popped up, and I'm just going to quote this anonymously, cite this anonymous quote. One of our members said, I avoid the Shopify marketplace because I believe it's only a matter of time before it conditions customers to engage with my products through its interface, ultimately putting Shopify in a position to charge me for access to my own audience via paid placement or advertising. And so I guess my question to you is, you know, I think a lot of our members have been burned by adopting Amazon and then seeing their margin just completely crushed there when they've felt like they've been, when they've gotten enough power. Same thing with Facebook to a degree from an advertising perspective. And so, two-part question. One, what's the future? How much do you see the future of Shopify being marketplace focused versus infrastructure focused? And how do you feel like, can you make any, I guess, claims or promises that that's not going to happen if people kind of embrace that model?
Yeah, I think the answer is we will always be both. You know, we take a maybe slightly different perspective, and that is we believe commerce occurs at the moment and place that the customer chooses to transact. That is an omni-channel experience. And so that extends through all the social platforms, through the marketplaces, including our app infrastructure. And so we want to offer up optionality for all customers to get connected to the merchants and brands that they love. We think our app is one of the places that they will shop. It won't be the only place, but it is an extension of a community that we think is fairly high value. You know, most people don't know this, but our shop buyer mesh is both more affluent and younger than the Apple Pay audience. And that's a very special audience in the marketplace. It's not the one that you see showing up in Amazon perpetually. It has a different buyer graph associated. And so at the end of the day, we believe deeply that choice is the thing that we should be enabling for our customers. And the shop app is just one of those other choices. It's a place of convenience that more than 250 million buyers go to on a regular basis. And it's the brands that they know and love and they're familiar with. And it has a trust associated with it that once that transaction takes place, we follow that transaction, that product from the storefront to the customer and make sure that they get it on time. So I don't think it'll ever be a replacement. You won't see a shift to exclusively marketplaces or exclusively infrastructure. The goal is to enable choice.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, from Shopify's perspective, that makes the most sense. But again, going back to what has happened to so many stores over the last 5+ years, if somebody is shopping on the shop app and somebody buys, is that customer, again, to paraphrase the question of another one of our members, is that customer the merchant's customer? Is that customer Shopify's customers or some combination of both?
Oh, it's absolutely the merchant's customer, right? We are surfacing the products at the pricing that the merchant ultimately wants them to be featured. And we see a buying behavior that suggests that there may be other products that they would be interested in. And so that's the intention of the marketplace. And then we learn from that. It helps inform the way we decide to go to market and how we merchandise other products and services. So, I mean, it's a benefit of all parties, I think, is the way the app marketplace is, or the shop app is designed. But make no mistake, the goal is to expand the reach of our merchants so that they can continue to grow at an accelerated pace.
I have a concept I call small durable brands that I won't repeat because people that listen to the podcast are probably familiar with it. But I have a pretty clear idea of where, personally, I just think the future of e-commerce is headed in terms of if you want to build a successful business going to stand, you know, the test of time, at least for 10 years or so, here's what you need to focus on. When you're at Shopify, from what you're looking at, you have such a fascinating perspective of you get to look down at all these stores and what works and what doesn't, and this incredible 30,000 view. Where do you see where do you see successful stores really investing heavily over the next 5 to 10 years? And by extension, I mean, what kind of stores are you trying to serve? What is that ideal prototype of a successful store going forward look like to you from the data that you have and the perspective you have?
I am constantly learning from our merchants that there isn't a single playbook. I think there are some themes that are relatively universal. Market expansion, expansion by product catalog. If you're direct D2C, are you building out a B2B wholesale business on top of that? Are you building out retail presence to represent your brand? The Gymshark model is a great example of that. I just visited their store in London. It's amazing. And it just amplifies what they do uniquely well. I think what's clear across all of the platforms is that your customer falling in love and creating deep connective tissue to your customer and an affinity to your brand still matters more than ever. And so, like, how do you speak uniquely to your audience in a way that makes them feel special and through your service delivery have surprise and delight moments along the way? And I think that can be, you know, the Gymshark model through influencers, which has clearly grown and been wildly successful. It can be through your traditional marketing efforts and building rewards and loyalty programs around your product. I think that has performed extremely well. And there's some that do that just in a very, very strong way. But at the end of the day, like, just fundamental execution on the fundamentals of operating the business at scale, like, that there's no replacement for that.
I want to talk a bit about AI, because I mean, it's 2025 and that takes up, seems like, 80% of the conversations these days anyway. When Toby recently, or I don't know if it was that recently, maybe 3-4 months within the last quarter or so, came out with a statement that more or less said, hey, we are not hiring for anyone at Shopify unless you can prove to me that their role cannot be done without AI. I think that was something that was pretty remarkable, first of its kind that I've heard of, and I think caught the attention of a lot of people. I'd love to hear how that is manifesting itself within the company. I know in 2023, Shopify kind of shrunk headcount, I believe, by 15-20%. And layoffs are, you know, downsizing is always hard. But one thing that most people listening to right now are struggling with is how do I run as leanly and efficiently as possible? It's just almost universal. So I'd love to hear how that's actually looking on the ground in Shopify, what kind of things you're using AI for, and just any details or insights under the hood on that, I think would be really cool and people would love to hear.
If you read through that document, some could interpret it as, oh, Shopify is going to go through another round of layoffs. They're just going to defer to AI. That's not it. What Toby is driving towards is a mandate to use this new tool that has more capability than we are tapping into today to help us take the low value task oriented parts of our job and bring an AI partner, a digital twin, along our side to help take that work off of our plate so we can spend time in the most productive areas of our business. So, for example, in my organization, we have multiple stages of the customer journey, but think about our merchant success managers that wake up every day and they will spend a tremendous amount of their time preparing for the first meeting with the customer, building out all the slideware, researching the account, comparing against other industry sets. And a lot of this is manual across multiple different systems. Once we democratized AI, and just so you know, I think most firms would say AI lives in your machine learning data science part of the organization. We have put AI in the hands of every single employee at Shopify. And we've put the tools to build Vibecode AI solutions in every single one of our employees. So we have over 800 cursor downloads across my organization, and we're the commercial team. We're not the data engineering or data science team. We've got Gumloop, which is one of many MCPs that we use in-house to do connected workflows. And so what's happened is we have an audience that has started to vibe code up solutions to take the most administrative tasks that they like the least out of their daily work and automate that so that an agent is going out and doing it on your behalf so that they can spend and have more time with customers. So in that example of MSMs going out, that pre-work and due diligence of querying the admin and pulling all the most recent information, building out the slideware, comparing and contrasting to other audiences, reconciling back to past conversations, you were initially vibe coded as point solutions, then were connected through an MCP that connected workflow from system to system. And now most of that is done automatically so that we can have either longer conversations, more detailed conversations, or just more conversations with our customers. And that's a much higher value than doing the behind the scenes administrative prep work that goes into getting ready. And you can rinse, repeat that for the marketing organization, for the solution engineers that are building out launch cases and technical design. You can put it into our customer support organization, also my team, go into our help center, and it's just one single bar now, which is a AI chat interface that allows you to work through and get your answers. Like, we solve most of the customer support queries now in our help center. That was not the case 3 years ago, but it's because of some of the agentic adoption that we've democratized across the business. So I think that's what people miss in that note, is it's not about reducing heads. It's about increasing the productivity and the value that we create for the customer.
That's amazing. So even as far down to a sales manager or someone who's customer facing, providing tier one or two, tier two support, those members of the team are equipped with Cursor installs to be able to create their own tools, their own automations, their own AI solutions that they can incorporate into their workflows.
That's exactly right. And as a matter of fact, the way it shows up, it's very interesting. Once you, and this was a bit controversial when I did it, we have this thing, Toby called it out on his paper that he published. At the very bottom, it says Rev AI use cases. Rev AI use cases as a Slack channel is the highest performing, most active Slack channel in all of Shopify. And it's a place where all of the roles can come together and feature how they're using AI to help do their job. And it's very interesting. There's three key patterns of behavior that I think might be interesting to your audience. One is you have most of your frontline employees are doing one of two things. They are either solving for a part of their role that they wish they didn't have to do, and they're raising their hand saying, I'm willing to put in the effort to take this level of administrivia off of my plate, or they're amplifying a strength. It's something that they do well today, but they would like to take it to the next level. And there's really no in between. It's either a pain or a pleasure that they are ultimately tapping into. And it's wildly diverse. And so that's the first thing. The second is that through having conversations at all levels of the organization, the pattern recognition that I've picked up is that your earlier in career employees are more AI native than your management layer. And this is the first time, if you think through all the other role and responsibilities or functions of leadership, generally speaking, you want your leader of a team to be the most knowledgeable technologist or the deepest commercial expert, or like they're in that role because they've demonstrated a skill that is superior. And as a result, they are now helping to educate and grow a team of individuals to that same level of capability. This is the one example I have found, at least in my 30 years of doing this, where the team is teaching the management how to use this new capability. It's reversing that hierarchy. And it's a big miss, because it's one of the things that in order to democratize and continue to take it to the next level, management has a lot of ground to make up. So that would be the second thing. And then the third is we use this crowdsourcing of nominated actions that the field is taking to leverage AI to help them do their jobs, to then identify where are their common themes and is there an opportunity to take multiple individually developed solutions and move them into something that we call Revenue Labs. And that Revenue Labs team has a team of engineers that will take down the vibe coded, yes, it works, but it's probably not the way we would design it if we were doing it, you know, for the next 3 years, and then rebuild it from the bottom up the way, you know, with very high end, you know, 10 out of 10 solution engineers that will code and design it the way that we would want it designed. So instead of the business prescribing down through the org chart how we will leverage AI as an organization, we have armed all of the employees to volunteer through their own actions where they see the biggest opportunities, and then we crowdsource and harden as we go up market.
That's really cool. It's this almost, you know, tinkering lab. You take the best things and you systematize them and make them polished. Shopify has, you know, some of the best talent in the industry, and so that's a great place to start. But even still, with incredibly talented people that you hire, I imagine there's still a layer of resistance, or you know, anything new or unknown, it takes time to adopt, it takes time for people to embrace. Any tips you would have for people listening to be able to get that level, or even 50% of that level of engagement and AI adoption within their own teams? Because this is something we talk about a lot in our community, actually. It's like, how do you get your team on board with this? And I think a lot of owners have had fairly frank conversations with people. I know I have with my team. I've said, hey, you either need to get really good at AI or really good at working, you know, directly face-to-face with people. Because those are the two areas where there's going to be future. We can either embrace that now and plan for that future, or we can face the harsh reality of that in 2 years when that's just, you know, unavoidable. Anything that's worked well for Shopify for helping encourage adoption?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. One is enabling a playfulness with AI and this notion of tinkering. In almost every single technological shift, the first thing is just getting your hands on the technology. Regardless of I think we made it very easy at Shopify to say, I'm not asking you to vibe code a solution. Like, we didn't start there. We started with, what are the fun ways you're using AI at home? Completely separate from work. How is it? And people start sharing ideas, and it prompts another set of ideas, and it prompts another set of ideas. And then we opened it up to sharing, how are we using it at work? And it started off with very basic LLM, you know, meeting summaries, summarizing large documents, putting large documents into action plans, doing podcast summaries through LLMs, like some very, very basic stuff. And I think over time, making your organization feel like it's okay to start with tinkering. They don't have to have it all figured out. And I see three separate stages of AI nativeness, and we talk about them a lot inside the business. AI native is at the very top. This is it's the default for you. It's the first place you go. AI curious, you're still dabbling, you're using AI, but you're probably using it in the context of its capabilities, you know, 9 months ago. And then you still have this in AI basics. Like, they treat it like a search engine. They still think it's Google. It looks like a line that you just type in a question and you get an answer back, and they haven't yet tapped into the full capability. And so, like, we just strongly encourage each one of those stages to take the next right step. If you're still using AI very generically, let's get you into some of the LLM capabilities and stretch your mind a little bit in terms of how it can come along your side. If that's the way you're working today and you've maybe developed some point solutions, look to the input and the output of that point solution. And let's get you into an MCP, starting to stitch together end-to-end workflows. And then if you want to take that to the next level, you've got an end-to-end workflow that is relatively repetitive and is on some regular cadence. How do I use Operator to go out and do that on my behalf on a go-forward basis so that I don't even have to touch it? It operates and runs on its own.
Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Julia from abarabove.com, where she and her husband and co-founder sell premium mixology products. Julie's been incredible. She's one of our meetup leaders in California and just an amazing human. And here's what she has to say about her experience with the e-commerce fuel private community for 7- and 8-figure owners.
I am one of those people that logs into the forums probably every day. It's kind of like my Facebook feed for business. I like the gossip. I like to hear about all the different challenges that people are running into. A lot of times things will pop up there on the forums that weren't even on my radar. It's just kind of like a more interesting social media for me. And I love to just continue to stay in touch with a lot of the friends and acquaintances I've met along the way. So I would definitely say the forums. I'm on there all the time. Even if I don't post all the time, I just, I've learned so much and I continue to just really enjoy being a part of that.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7 or 8 figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. I want to talk a little bit about branding and checkout because they're a little intertwined, separate but intertwined. One of the things that from a shopping perspective, I think has been one of the more notable wins on Shopify side is Shop Pay. For so long, and again, this is going back many years, but mobile traffic was increasing, but conversion rates were a nightmare because it was just hard. It was really difficult to pay. And it was a pain, you had to type everything in. And I feel like Shop Pay has done such a good job of making it seamless where now I will often shop on my phone just as easily as I will on a desktop because I can go in, type in my email address, type in a code, bam, it's done. It's great. One of the concerns that surfaced, especially when I asked in our community, was kind of twofold and they were intermixed. One was related to branding. And so if you think about all the different brands that Shopify has right now. You've got Shopify as a platform. You have Shop Pay as a payment option. You have Shop the app, right? You have the Shopify app store. I'm fairly well-versed in the world and I even felt like I needed to kind of brush up on all those to make sure I had all my ducks in a row before we started talking. And one of the pain points that some of our merchants brought up was, especially for people that maybe are less plugged into that ecosystem, or less technically savvy, when they come through on the checkout page, especially, you know, they'll go, maybe it's on the Shopify site, maybe it's on the Shop app, but they'll come in and the branding like Shop Pay, they're not quite sure what that is, or maybe they think they're going to finance it. There's a lot of different payment options, a lot of branding, and just a lot of kind of brand confusion around all of those different things. So I guess two questions for you. Is that something you've spotted internally at Shopify or heard? And is there any kind of plans to try to kind of clarify those different silos and the branding around all those different things?
I haven't heard that. So that's good. That's good feedback, Andrew. I'll take it back to Mani and the team who lead the checkout. Generally speaking, you know, we think Shop has a good brand identity associated with it. It's synonymous with trust. It has the audience that we talked about earlier. And it is one of many options. If customers want to use an alternative express checkout, they're welcome to do that. And we think it defrictions the overall shopping experience and makes it easier for customers just to follow through with the transaction that they've put into their cart. So the fact that you're suggesting that there may be some confusion around the nomenclature of how the brand is represented, I have not heard, but to the extent that is showing up as friction, you know, we see friction and latency as pollution, and we try to squeeze it out of every part of our business.
Shopify Plus. So Shopify Plus is your enterprise plan for larger merchants, more options, of course. Most people know that listening. What, obviously significantly more expensive, what are some of the, and I know, you know, you can't give all the, you know, share all the secrets that are saved for the press release day. I get that. But as much as you can, or at least hint to them, or maybe directionally, what kind of things do you have planned for Shopify Plus in the future to further differentiate it from the regular plans?
So the Shopify for Enterprise offering has been in market since April 1st, was a slow roll, became relatively mainstay July 1st of last year, and has been the primary offering that we take to market to each of our enterprise clients that are considering Shopify. There are really three paths, three on-ramps, I like to call them, to Shopify. We have a very good, easy path front door for you to begin your journey with us and get started. It's a very easy setup and go, the entrepreneurship route, the stuff we're known for. Plus, which is this, what I would call kind of mid-tier product offering or pricing offering that allows you to come on board to Shopify and take advantage of our customer success frameworks and some other advanced capabilities. And then now a third one for enterprises to come on board. And it's been well received. You know, it also defrictions the payments options for enterprise clients. It allows for a bring your own payment gateway or payment provider. So we would love for you to run on Shopify payments. If you choose that you would prefer on the enterprise offering to run on Adyen or Stripe or someone else in the marketplace, you're welcome to do that. You lose some of the benefits that come with being on Shopify payments, which include the Shop Pay Network and a bunch of other things that are down the line. But we've tried to defriction the product offering upmarket so that it becomes more conducive to our enterprise clients' needs.
Yeah, I would guess the average person listening to this, the average person in our community is probably running a store in the mid, like, you know, probably $4 to $6 million range. And so enterprise, we definitely have some eight and a handful of nine-figure store owners.
It would be more plus.
Yeah, that's going to be more plus. So on the plus side, what kind of things are you most excited about looking down the road 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, if I outlined my roadmap on your podcast, you and I would be talking about other commerce providers that I could go work at. So I'm not going to give you what's on the roadmap. But I think looking back at the last rounds of additions are probably a good sense of where are we making investments and what future investments would be likely to follow. Happy to shoot you maybe a note offline on what those have looked like. But you know, to your audience, the thing that you can count on is we'll continue to do 100 new features every 6 months or more that we will put into the product. It will be across predominantly our core because that services the largest audience, but there will be plus specific features that will be built into that. And there will be enterprise specific features that will be built into that. We have a very strong feedback loop back to product from our customers, telling our product teams what our customers are looking for. That feedback loop then comes into consideration as an input to what gets built in the following quarter and half for the next edition. So good feedback loop, good past record of building new capability. And I think you'll see the percentage of those 100 plus new features that land exclusively in plus will probably remain that same percentage for the next few editions as we go forward.
For pricing on a transaction plus basis, I can understand, you know, a great way to be able to make some of those entry-level plans cheaper is by having a transaction fee on top of any third-party payment providers that you're using. But that was one of the kind of common issues and concerns our members had was just really being disappointed that they couldn't use a third-party provider without paying that fee. Is there anything how married is Shopify to the existing structure of kind of pay-to-play additionally for third-party providers? Is there any wiggle room there? Is that something that could ever get changed?
We think Shopify Payments is wildly valuable to our customers. And not just as a payment option, but because of all the other effects that come along with it. Shopify Payments enables the Shop Pay Network, which we know drives a 5% better conversion rate just by being available on the site. And so there's a premium associated with that. That premium has been at the right side of value for a very long time. We do like to have a system that is set up that as we grow only when our customers grow. And so our monetization model could very well have been very heavy on the subscription side. Many of the alternatives in the market have really heavied up there. We have decided to say, no, we want to make that subscription barrier to entry very low for our customers to come on to Shopify. Let us put our money where our mouth is. As we come along your side and help you grow, tap into the network effects of places like the Shop app and the Shop audience. And as we continue to build new features in that we don't charge extra for, we just bake them into the plan. You know, we share in the growth success of our merchants at the same rate. And then as you grow, you get to a point where Maybe you want to have that option because you've reached a scale where you have the ability to leverage, you have buying power in the market that allows you to leverage your that to improve your rate structure through maybe other third parties. We allow for that on the enterprise without that fee structure. So there is an ability to do it as you get bigger. But until then, most of the value is really in the rest of the ecosystem that comes around the shop pay.
How do you think about who your biggest competitor is in competition in the marketplace? I mean, like I disclosed at the top, I'm a Shopify stock owner. And one of the reasons is because I look at what you have built and I don't see a strong, compelling option for SMBs for hosted e-commerce in the space. If you want to do your own stuff, you can do WooCommerce. Maybe you can do some Adobe Cloud or whatever Magento used to be called. That's even a little more upmarket. But there's just not a lot there. BigCommerce was a player for a while, but they've kind of had some struggles, I think, in recent years. So I guess, yeah, who do you see as, if you had to name your biggest competition, who would you say it is?
You know, it's just going to sound really weird. The way I would have answered this question 2 years ago is different than the way I would answer it now. I put our competitive landscape into really just two buckets. Those that have an alternative commerce platform in play, and those that are running custom. They're designed for a different time. They're designed, you know, the custom stacks were built specifically to meet a need that wasn't available in the market through any of the platforms. And now they've become unwieldy and slow. And the same is true for many of the legacy platforms that were out there. I think, you know, Magento and Demandware, these were all very, very good in their day. The challenge is they've been consumed by businesses that commerce is not the number one priority.
You mentioned Toby, and I want to end with a question about him. I mean, I'm obviously biased, as are you. We've been in the e-commerce space. But even people, maybe if they're not huge Shopify fans for whatever reason, would have to acknowledge he's been a pretty revolutionary leader over the last decade. You know, you work with him fairly closely. For people listening, take us into a room with him. It's hard to know someone from the news, from little snippets and things like that. What would surprise someone or impress someone about Toby if they had a chance to sit in with a meeting with him and get to know him or have a beer with him? What is he like, you know, outside of all the media stuff and the stories?
He is a technologist first. He is mission-driven, all the things that you would expect. I find him just very casual and at moments extremely funny. Like he has a sense of humor that I don't think people outside get to see or appreciate. I've always worked at professionally run, large scale, very big organizations. And I didn't know what I was missing until I came to spend some time with Toby. And there's just something about the clarity that a founder brings to an organization that is special. There's a speed of business. There's a speed of decision-making. There's strong opinions loosely held brought into the room. And I find myself over the last 3 years really learning what makes an amazing CEO. Toby's been highly influential in kind of reshaping some misconceptions that I had throughout my career. And I've worked for some very, really strong ones, right? I mean, I would put Satya at the very top of that list, his deep customer obsession. And Sasan Goodarzi, very, very good at looking at what are the inputs before the inputs, what we used to call input metrics, and how do you drive the controllable inputs that help deliver an outcome and deep focus on the customer. And, you know, at Verizon, it was execution and a deep focus on customer. And Toby has passion for mission. He doesn't get distracted by tier two and tier three things that maybe circle around the outside that become more noise than signal. He is extremely high signal and cares deeply about his customers, about his team, and wants to make all the above pointed towards his mission. Like I know that probably sounds generic. I thoroughly enjoy when we get an opportunity to spend time, especially time that's unconstructed. Like it isn't specifically designed around the topic. We just get a chance to sit down and talk about what's going on personally, professionally, he's very approachable.
Yeah, Bobby, appreciate the time. Thank you. Thank you for being willing to listen to input, both on this episode and also after the fact, and for what you're building at Shopify. It's enabled a lot of really cool stories and a huge part of our industry. So thank you.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.